idea.
Mothers do that.
House Rules Committee come to order. It's Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. We have a few items on our agenda today. Members, we are not going to work House Bill 3522 today. Carry that over. The plan for today is to move out House Bill 3294. We have an amendment on House Bill 3499, which we'd like to adopt, but we don't have the paperwork yet, so we won't pass that out today. 3521, we'd like to send a Ways and Means today. 3523, turns out the amendment that we had requested, it has a flaw, so it's not ready to be adopted yet, so we'll bring it back. We'll carry that over. Scrivener's error, it appears. So with that overview, why don't we open a public hearing, a work session on House Bill 3499. Representative Berger, do you want to let us know what's going on?
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Whitsitt's bill regarding property that, if you recall, the testifier who bought property that turned out to be sort of infected, if you will, from a methamphetamine lab, and what she wanted was some way of notification. And since it is true that in these circumstances, in these particular circumstances, it is the foreclosing agency has no way of getting into the building and determining it, we have come up with an amendment that basically says, in the section that is under the sale documents that says, without limiting the trustee's disclaimer of representations or warranties, Oregon law requires the trustee to state in this notice that some residential property sold at a trustee sale may have been used in manufacturing methamphetamines, the chemical components of which are known to be toxic. It's very clear language that then would be put with the notice of sale, so anyone purchasing would have no way of saying it wasn't posted, and it would also be posted because this posting has to be published. It's going to be pretty clear. That is the -4 amendment, Mr. Chair, that I believe all parties have agreed is appropriate and put in the right place to notify people.
Thank you for the work that you did to bring this amendment to us. Are there any questions for Representative Berger?
I do have a question.
Yes.
So how does the trustee know that methamphetamine, that the house is infected or
they don't?
Okay, so this is just standard language that would go into any sale?
No, only those sales under the trustee where the trustee hasn't been able to have, if it goes through any kind of a brokerage, any house like that, then you have access. People have access to the house. They can go in and test it. It is only those circumstances where, through a trustee sale, there is no access to the house before it goes up for sale. So this disclaimer then would go and basically says, we don't know if it's in there, but it's possible that it's in there. And then you, if you choose to buy the house, you understand that you are taking this risk. And it's pretty clear that it doesn't mince any words. That's why I read it to you. So these are a particular circumstance where there is no opportunity for either the seller or the buyer to get into the house ahead of time and have it tested. If it goes through a regular brokerage, the regular process, you have an opportunity to walk in and test the house yourself before you purchase it.
Thank you.
Any further questions? So I think we could take a motion to adopt the -4.
I can. Mr. Chair?
I move the -4 amendment into House Bill 3499.
Representative Hicks moves the -4 amendment to House Bill 3499. Any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you again, Representative, for working with the interested parties to get this done. We'll wait for our paperwork on that bill and move it in the future. Let's open I'll close the work session on House Bill 3499. open a work session on House Bill 3294. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a public hearing on this bill at this point quite some time ago, at which, excuse me, at which time there were questions raised about the scope of the bill and about the way in which the portion of the bill was written so that it wasn't clear which email addresses it applied to. The bill is 7 pages long. The only part that counts is the boldface on the end of it on page 7. We think that the Dash 3 amendment adequately addresses both of those things because it expands the exception for email electronic mail addresses to agencies or subdivisions of the executive department, local government or local service districts, and special government bodies. And then the final phrase has been changed so that it actually states that the email addresses we're talking about that are not to be released to the public are the ones that have been given to the agencies in furtherance of some other business, and not the ones that are issued to employees for the use of the employees while they're working for the department. So it's simply a clarification. And I'd commend it to you. I think it does what we're trying to do.
Representative Hicks.
So, and Representative, did you say there's a Scrivener's error that's going to get it back down to LC?
I don't think so.
Is it? No.
That was
oh, okay. I'm sorry. It's not.
Yeah, that's 3523.
Okay. So, well, if we...
This is better.
Oh, I'm sorry. So there's one thing I want to ponder out loud, which is this is what somebody did some analysis for me on, and it seems that by amending 192.502, we are making this unconditionally exempt from public records disclosure, whereas if we were to amend 192.501, the email addresses would be conditionally exempt from public records disclosure if in some particular situation it were warranted. And so do we want to say it under no circumstances will these be exempt from public records disclosure, or are we willing to examine and say, well, there might be some particular circumstances in which it would be appropriate to release the emails? So the difference between 501 and 502, in terms of which statute we amend, is what determines that?
No.
Is it worth pausing on this point? Yeah, maybe could we pause on this point a little bit and maybe hold it over another day? Is this 3290? Would that be acceptable to
I thought, if I could, Mr. Chair, I thought that the section that we were putting this in was the one that that was intended.
That has the balancing test?
Yes. That was the one I thought we were putting
in. A very clever lawyer found it for me and said, no, that's the statute just before this statute.
Actually, I'm wrong, now that I think about it. We considered looking at the balancing test statute, concluded that the effect of that would be virtually no protection at all. And that's why we ended up choosing 502.
And why is that? That it would be no protection at all?
Well, I relied on other people who seem to know how these statutes actually work for that opinion.
It's worth to me discussing this question, whether we close it forever or whether we would a good representative be amenable to that if we were to maybe bring in a witness to articulate the differences?
I don't have any problems at all with bringing in a witness. I'm concerned about the fact that if the bill doesn't go to the Senate pretty soon, it won't matter what our position is on it.
It's likely to be referred to Senate rules. And is there an applicable deadline?
No. If it were to go to Senate rules, we wouldn't have a deadline problem.
Right. Well, there'd be no deadline problem, but there would be a sign-a-die problem. That's the concern I have about any House bill at this point. If we don't get them out pretty fast, they will not get through the process on the other side. I think it's a perfectly reasonable and open question as to whether or not the emails in this situation should be absolutely protected, which I believe is what the rule should be, or whether they should be subject to release based on some kind of a balancing test. So the one that the amendment that we have here actually does absolutely protect them, as I understand the two sections. I think that your informant has correctly informed you at least let me say we agree about the effect of the bill.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, so indeed, and you know, citizens provide their information to the state, they want it protected, they assume it is. A lot of them are probably surprised that it isn't, and so for that reason, I do want to keep the concept alive, so I am fine with if we move it out today in its fashion, in its current form, and then we just keep an open, or we communicate these concerns over to our Senate counterparts as the bill is pending over there.
I think that's very reasonable.
All right.
Okay.
Identifying the issue, of course, if I may, Mr. Chair, identifying the issue on the floor so that the Senate will be alerted that this may be something that they want to look at.
They yeah. should consider the policy implication of that. Okay, that sounds very, very acceptable. So we're in work session. We have an amendment that's ready to move.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just for the record, we have a minimal fiscal impact on the dash three and no revenue impact, so we have the appropriate paperwork in place.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 3294.
Representative Hicks moves the dash three amendment to House Bill 3294. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? All right, seeing none, motion carries. The bill is amended.
And Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3294 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hicks moves House Bill 3294 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Berger.
Briefly, I will say this is a good bill. I think people need protection from too much exposure. I'm consistent in this. Thank you.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you. And actually, I echo that, too. I think a lot of, as I sort of said earlier, I think a lot of people would be surprised to think that their information is accessible. And so it's a good step to protect the citizens' information this way.
Representative Kenemer.
I just wanted to confirm we're going to be very clear that it needs further work.
Yes. I don't know that I have a strong opinion on the issue about which of the chat provisions it goes into, but it is an important fork in the road. This bill chooses one path. The other path could be chosen in the Senate, and that would be okay with me.
Right.
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
If I could, Mr. Chair, to make it clear, I don't think the bill needs further work. It may very well be that the Senate would want to consider that fork in the road, that alternate fork. But that's a policy question, not a please let's do additional work question.
And thank you for that clarification.
And the fix, of course, would simply be to rewrite the amendment and dump it into the other section, which could, of course, be done with an amendment in the Senate without any difficulty if they chose to give a lesser protection to the email address. And, of course, just to make a final, if I may, Mr. Chair, the point of this, I think, is that when I give my email address to an agency for some business purpose that I have with the agency, I don't expect it to be used for something else, and it shouldn't be used for something else. That's the point of the bill as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion to adopt the amendment. Oh, sorry, we already adopted the amendment. Further discussion on the motion to move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any objection to the motion? Okay. Hearing none, motion carries. Representative Barnhart, carry the bill, please.
Yes, sir.
Close the work session on House Bill 3499. We need Representative Hoyle for the other two items, so let's just stand at ease for a minute. She's on her way. Public hearing on House Bill 3513. Representative Hoyle or Ms. Sauer, do you want to start by telling us where we are on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3513, we briefly heard on May 13th. The measure provides that matters for which quorum of governing body may not meet in private for purpose of deciding or deliberating are limited to budget, fiscal, or policy matters. It provides that certain communication, fact-gathering activities, or on-site inspections of property or facilities do not constitute governing body deciding on or deliberating towards decision, extends period during which suit may be brought asserting violation of public meeting laws from 60 to 90 days. You do have a dash one amendment. The amendment removes all the language with the exception of the extension period during which a suit may be brought from 60 to 90 days.
I think Representative Hoyle is going to start us off, and then we have several, about half a dozen witnesses, so we'll hear from them.
Hi, Val Hoyle, represent West Virginia Junction City, and thank you. And I would assume that many of the people that are coming to speak on this bill are coming to speak about the concerns with the original bill. And the reason that I brought this forward was at the request of a constituent. We had some issues in our county where there was a lawsuit about the use of about county commissioners communicating and whether or not they were subject to public meeting law. And there are a number of city and county officials who, unlike legislators, don't have the opportunity to caucus, where they weren't sure how the law applied to them after this lawsuit and given the nature of communication, electronic communication now. There has been a work group, and what we expect is that there will continue to be work with the stakeholders to clarify the rules so that our city and county elected officials can have clarity around what how the public meeting laws apply. But the dash one amendments just leave in place the extension of the period during which a suit may be brought asserting a violation of public meeting laws from 60 to 90 days after the decision becomes public record. So that is all that this bill will do. Again, I brought this at the request of a constituent, and I do think that it's an important issue to address. I'd be happy to take any questions.
All right, thank you. Is there Representative Kenemer?
Yeah. Yes. How does that differ from current law then?
Current law is it's 60 days, and this would be 90 days. So it would extend it for 30 days.
Questions? Representative Bernhardt.
So this bill went from 3 pages to 1 page.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's a victory.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Thank you, Representative. I guess we only have 3 witnesses, Peggy Lynch, Alex Kyler, and Dan Meek. You can all come up together.
It doesn't move. So I guess I holler. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm not Kathy Eaton, although we both have white hair. She had a conflict, so I'm the poor substitute for you today. Our testimony is on OLIS. I can elaborate our concerns, but I just heard the good representative say that she has dash ones, which we would fully support. So unless you would like to hear the many reasons that we think that this the current bill without the dash ones ought not to move forward, I am here to answer questions, and we certainly support the dash ones, and thank you. But we do understand the issue, and we are hopeful that there will be some resolution. We care about our local government officials and that they know how to do the right thing. I served on the Open Oregon Board and to provide the Open Meetings Law booklet. So with that, I am here to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, I'm Alex Kyler. Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager, here to testify on House Bill 3513. Lane County actually took a directed me to take a monitor Senate Bill 41, which was really the first bill that came on the Senate side. It was a product of the work group. And during that testimony on that side, I expressed that while Lane County had agreed to participate in the work group, the county commissioners, having firsthand experience, obviously, with the case in question, had really been, I mean, they're doing all their business on the dais. I mean, it is really sent a chilling effect. You know, the vice chair talked about the chilling effect across the state. Well, it was very chilling in Lane County. So most of their work has been done up on the dais. And in fact, they were, while there was some suggestion of trying to make it easier for especially the three-member commissions to communicate, that board was trying to figure out how to tighten the law. And thus, we're very happy to see the extension of the time on the statute of limitations, which is one of the things that was not in Senate Bill 41, which was what our commissioners actually wanted, was more time. The downside to more time, if I could address your comments, Representative Kenmore, is that does take longer than for a decision of the board to be sort of cemented into place, if you will. But adding 30 days seems to be a good compromise to where some of the more some folks would have liked to go for actually even more time. So at any rate, we think that this is a very difficult question. There was a lot of people who worked very hard on trying to figure out some language that would be better here. After former Commissioner Dumdye testified last week, we agreed to put some more time into seeing if we could come up with something that would work. But there's just an awful lot of questions when you get into futzing with public records, and I ask that we get the one extension in the statute of limitations, and we would commit to continuing to work on this over the interim and see if we can come up with something that does provide more language around, not only tightening but providing some exemptions so that people can have the frank conversations amongst themselves that are really part and parcel of local government. So
thank you.
I'm open for any questions if you have.
Mr. Meek.
My name is Dan Meek. I represent here the Oregon Progressive Party, and I just note that the Independent Party of Oregon has also submitted written testimony against this bill. I submitted 3 pages of written testimony, Mr. Chair, on May 13th against the original bill because it appears that it would allow a quorum of a governing body to have private meetings for fact-gathering activities and private meetings for on-site inspections of property or facilities at a location other than the regularly scheduled meeting room of a governing body. I think it's a very bad idea to allow or to try to allow any government body to engage in fact-gathering activities or on-site inspections in private, and that's what HB 3513, without the amendment, would allow. In addition, the bill also apparently exempts from the open meeting requirement and would allow a quorum of a governing body to have private meetings involving any topic that is not a, quote, budget, fiscal, or policy, unquote, matter. But the bill doesn't define budget or fiscal or policy, so we don't really know what that means. Today, under the existing law, meetings must be open if the body discusses, quote, any matter, except as provided by ORS 192.610 to 192.690, which are very limited exemptions for situations such as medical information, child abuse information, and nuclear power plant security plans. So changing that to allow the discussion of anything that is not a budget, fiscal, or policy matter would tear a giant hole, I believe, in the open meetings law. Oregon already ranks at the bottom of states in public access to information, according to the State Integrity Investigation, which is a project of the Center for Public Integrity and Public Radio International and others. In 2012, they gave Oregon an F, grade in public access to information. I think adopting this bill would earn Oregon an F minus if that grade were possible. Of course, I have no awareness of the amendment until coming into the hearing room today, and the amendment essentially deletes everything about the bill that I just discussed. So
that's what makes it good.
The amendment is good, bill bad. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Representative Hicks? No.
Thank you. For Mr. Kyler, in regards to executive sessions, does the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners use executive sessions? If so, do they make decisions in them? And then the reason I'm asking is because we have 90 days following the date that the decision becomes public record. And so what is, how do you know when the decision has become public record? What is the public record in regards to an executive session scenario?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Hicks, no decisions are allowed in executive session. So executive session, they have to come out of executive session to actually record a decision.
Okay.
And that's how it's handled.
Representative Kenemer.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. As a county commissioner in a commission of three for 12 years, it was quite an experience to find out that every discussion was a public record event and that we should do it at not that we should, that we had to do it in a public meeting. And I have to say the first year and a half was an incredible adjustment. I had spent 10 years in the Senate, so I had some public service experience, but certainly I was used to having offline discussions. And although I got to say that after a couple of years, I began to like it. And it's sort of my view became, we are discussing the public's business. Sometimes it's pretty messy and inconvenient to discuss it publicly, but it is the public's business, and if we really believe it's the public's business, we finally got to where we were pretty much okay with it. It was very awkward at times, and people could fly off the handle and this and that, but I'm not sure necessarily it needs to be fixed.
Representative Hoyle.
I do want to say that there are times when there are discussions that happen that are not about the business
yes.
of the public. And what we have is we have county commissioners and that are so concerned about when we talk about the chilling effect after this lawsuit that do not want to travel together to go to places because yeah. they're concerned that those conversations would be subject to public meeting law, even if they're talking about their families, they're talking about things that have nothing to do with the business of the county. And so we've been asked for clarification. And to be very clear, Mr. Meek, I do not in any way support hiding, doing the business of the public from the public. But I do believe that we need to accommodate normal conversations. And allowing people to do their jobs and do it in a way that is manageable and to give clarity on what is reasonable, what's legal, and what we need to do to ensure that when decisions are made, they're made in public. And that was the question that we had in Lane County, was that people use the letter of the law to go around the intent of the law, and we want to make sure that those decisions are made in the public. We amended the bill because, as written, it was not what we were looking for, but we do think that there needs to be clarity to the structure and, again, update the law to reflect that we use e-communications differently than when the law was originally written. So I will push to have some more clarity, and again, I do believe it needs to be changed because we've had local elected officials come to us saying we really need to have some clarity around what we can and can't do when we're not doing the business of the county or the city.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to keep my mouth shut, but I find that since the subject has been touched on briefly by two representatives so far, I have to put on the table in this discussion my pet peeve, which is that we go to very great lengths to constrain the meetings of local government to absolutely open accessibility, and we sit in the legislature and have a system that you can drive a truck through called the caucuses. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Any further questions?
Hopefully the relighting clause is small.
Thank you, panel, very much.
It will be.
So close the public hearing on House Bill 3513. We don't have a work session posted, so we are done with that for today. We'll do the dash one in the near future. Final item of business is to open a work session on House Bill 3521.
Why would you take responsibility yourself?
This is the voter registration bill that all are familiar with. What I'd like to do today is move the bill to the Ways and Means Committee, but before doing so, there's at least one amendment that needs to be, I think just one amendment that needs to be adopted. Do you want to tell us what that is?
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, you have the dash two amendment before you. The amendment exempts from public disclosure of voter registration information for a person under the age of 18. We also received a dash four amendment this morning. We do not have the appropriate paperwork on the dash four amendment. We do on the dash two and the original bill. But just for the record, the dash four amendment directs non-registered person whose information is provided by a qualified designated voter registration agency to be marked as an inactive voter, and directs the Secretary of State or County Clerk to notify elector of their status as inactive, how to become active, and the process for selection of a political party when the person is, or to how to cancel their registration.
Okay. That amendment came from Representative Bentz. I told him this morning that I'm not prepared to adopt that amendment. However, the bill is going to Ways and Means for the purpose of allowing continuing conversation about issues of cost and expense and how those might be addressed. And he understood that.
Thank you.
So I'd like to have a motion on the dash two. Or, yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3521.
Vice Chair Hoyle moves the dash two amendment to House Bill 3521. Is there any discussion on the motion, Vice Chair Hicks?
So I'm not supportive of the underlying bill, but I do actually want to express my appreciation for the chair and members of this committee for reconsidering this particular question in regards to persons under the age of 18. So I do appreciate the chair, even though the bill, as I've said, I'm not supportive of the underlying. But thank you for at least putting this amendment in there.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, motion carries. The bill is amended, and so our next motion, please.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3521 as amended with a due pass recommendation and the measure be referred to a committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Hoyle moves House Bill 3521 as amended with a due pass recommendation and the measure be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there a discussion on the motion? Okay. Seeing none, let's have a roll call vote, please.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Denbro.
Aye.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Kenemer.
No.
Vice Chair Hoyle.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hicks.
No.
Chair Garrett.
Aye. Motion carries. The bill is referred to Ways and Means. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3521. And that concludes our business. Committee's adjourned.